Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Cleanaway FY 2021 full year results conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question via the phone, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you wish to ask a question via the webcast, please type your question into the ask a question box. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Brendan Gill, COO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Joining me on the call today is our CFO, Paul Binfield, and our Head of Investor Relations, Richie Farrell. We appreciate you joining us this morning. Just turning over to the disclaimer on slide two. Before I run through the presentation, I draw your attention to the disclaimer. I will take it that you have read this. I'll now ask you to please move to slide three. In terms of the agenda today, I'll take you through the highlights and some of our ESG metrics. I will discuss the financial performance from a group perspective, including some of the COVID-19 challenges. I will then take you through the performance of each of our operating segments. Paul will then cover the statutory to underlying NPAT reconciliation, capital expenditure and cash flows, and financial position. He will also address our debt funding position and key metrics. I will then take you through key policy and market developments. I'll also provide you with an update of our key projects, and I'll finish the presentation with our priorities and outlook for the next year. Following that, I'll open the line for questions. Moving now to the FY 2021 highlights. I'm pleased to advise that we've continued to grow the business from top line, bottom line, and cash flow perspectives. Group net revenue was up 4.7% to just under 2.2 billion, reflecting new customer contracts and recent acquisitions. Group underlying EBITDA was up 3.8% to 535.1 million, with each of the three segments delivering higher EBITDA compared to FY 2020. Underlying NPAT increased 2.1% to 153.2 million, while statutory NPAT was up 31.2% to 147.7 million. Operating cash flows increased 5.7% to 424.4 million, reflecting higher EBITDA, lower remediation costs, and working capital movements. The directors declared a fully franked final dividend of 0.0235 per share, taking the total dividend up 12.2% to 0.046 per share, representing a payout ratio of 62.9% of underlying NPAT. Some of the key strategic outcomes delivered during the year included reaching an agreement to acquire two landfills and five transfer stations in Sydney from Suez. We now expect the transaction to complete around the middle of FY 2022. Works approval for the extension of the Melbourne Regional Landfill was upheld by the High Court after years of court processes. Resolution of this matter ensures the security of critical landfill airspace required to manage Melbourne's residual waste streams well into the future. We continued to execute our strategy with further greenfield developments and acquisitions, including the Grasshopper C&D business in Sydney, the Stawell Landfill in regional Victoria, and the Pinkenba Recycling business in Brisbane. Construction of the PET plastic pelletizing joint venture facility in Albury is on track for completion prior to calendar year-end, and our energy from waste project in Western Sydney is progressing to plan. We have also been diligently advancing our digitization data and analytics program of work. Moving now to people and culture. While this slide covers statistics in relation to our people and culture, I want to take this opportunity to acknowledge the people that make up Cleanaway. It has been a challenging time during the pandemic, and our people, regardless of their role or position, have stood up to those challenges and made it possible for us to continue to provide a very essential service to society. I'm extremely proud of each and every member of the Cleanaway team. I'm pleased to report that once again, we have improved our total recordable injury frequency rate, or TRIFR, which measures incidents per million hours worked. As of 30 June 2021, our TRIFR was 3.6, representing more than a 20% improvement from 30th of June 2020. We are always striving to improve our safety performance, and zero harm remains our goal. During the year, we invested $5 million to roll out Mobile Eye across our fleet. With the technology, drivers become more aware of their driving behaviours and their surrounds, and it delivered a measurable decrease in driver at-fault accidents and a reduction in incident severity. We conducted an employee engagement survey in October last year, which had been delayed from the usual time slot due to COVID, and reported a record level of engagement at 64%. I'm particularly pleased to report we completed another survey in June 2021, with engagement improving even further to 66%. Overall, voluntary turnover rates ticked up slightly, largely due to increased workforce participation rates and high demand for experienced labour. From a leadership perspective, we have a stable and effective team in place with no changes to the executive committee through the recent leadership transition. Female representation in absolute numbers continues to increase, but further work is required to meet our targets. Gender diversity targets have now been included as a management KPI for FY22 to help improve the rate of change. Moving on to the circular economy. Societal demands, policies and regulations continue to encourage greater circularity in the economy. Additionally, recovering resources for reuse by society just makes good sense and helps to ensure ongoing resources for future generations. We are proud to be leaders in completing the circle for commodities such as PET, HDPE and PP plastics, and we will do more where opportunities present. We are equally proud of our significant role in the other processes that make closed loop recycling possible. This is where others purchase our high purity recovered materials as a feedstock in their manufacturing processes. Our earnings are generated by charging to sort and process materials, and we may also capture commodity value, which fluctuates in response to market conditions. We seek to reduce volatility in earnings from the sale of recovered commodities by entering short, medium and long-term contracts and by sharing price risk with major commodity suppliers. We continue to explore the value chain for opportunities to create value, and we have recently invested in construction and demolition resource recovery capability in Victoria, Queensland and South Australia. Our acquisition of the Grasshopper C&D Collections business during the year complements our resource recovery processes in New South Wales. During the year, we completed the rebuild of the high specification Perth MRF, and we will begin commissioning the PET plastic pelletising plant in Albury next quarter. Planning is also well progressed for the Sydney MRF and the HDPE and PP plastic pelletising plant in Melbourne. Of course, there will always be residual markets that end up in landfill, materials that end up in landfill. Where it does so, we seek to capture the methane produced and beneficially reuse it as a direct fuel or to produce renewable energy. This now takes me to climate change on the next slide. The recently published sixth assessment report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change included some sobering climate statistics and predictions. At Cleanaway, we recognise the need to reduce our carbon emissions and contribute to mitigating global warming. Our ambition is to align the reduction in our carbon emissions to the 2015 Paris Agreement goal. We see this as a significant challenge, but one we must face. We will be action orientated, and in FY22 we'll be setting short and long-term emission reduction targets supported by credible actions. Moving now to the next slide covering the group performance overview. I'm pleased to report another year of growth and improvement across key financial metrics. Our net revenue was 4.7% higher than the prior corresponding period at $2.2 billion. Underlying EBITDA was 3.8% higher at $535.1 million, despite the ongoing impacts of COVID-19. EBITDA margin of 24.3% was 30 basis points lower than the corresponding period. This was due to a changing mix in our solids business, including lower earnings from two of our landfills, together with new customer wins and recent acquisitions that I will elaborate on later in the presentation. Underlying EBIT was 0.8% higher at $258.7 million, but EBIT margin was 40 basis points lower, which again was largely attributable to the performance of the landfills together with higher depreciation in the solids business. Underlying NPAT was 2.1% higher at $153.2 million and EPS was in line with FY20 at 7.3 cents per share. Compared to FY20, operating cash flow increased 5.7% to $424.4 million and cash conversion was strong at 102.4%. The board has declared a fully franked final dividend of 2.35 cents. This takes the total dividend to 4.6 cents per share, which is 12.2% higher than the prior corresponding period. Net debt to EBITDA ratio on a pre-AASB 16 basis for covenant testing purposes was 1.61 times at 30 June 2021. Paul will comment further on debt capacity later in the presentation. Moving now to the next slide on COVID-19 impacts. Like many businesses, COVID-19 continued to create challenges for us with both positive and negative impacts on our financial performance. In the municipal waste sector, general household and hard waste has delivered a net benefit, but it has not been as pronounced in recent months as it was in the initial lockdowns last year. More recently, there's been less panic buying, which drove household and supermarket waste volumes last year. The initial lockdowns last year provided householders with an opportunity to present household hard waste for curbside collection, although this service is now suspended in a number of jurisdictions. From a clinical waste perspective, we're also benefiting from hotel quarantine and COVID-19 testing work. More than offsetting the gains have been the fall in cruise line services and quarantine work, while education, events and conferences either have not returned or are substantially subdued. There is also significant downtrading due to lower CBD and tourism-related activity, which impacted the SME segment. Container deposit schemes were largely unaffected during the year, but recent restrictions in Sydney have required the closure of return and earn kiosks. This has resulted in approximately 2.5 million containers per day no longer being presented and therefore not collected by our dedicated CDS fleet. Until the last month or so, we had expected the new financial year's headwinds and tailwinds due to COVID-19 to be similar to FY21. There are, however, new challenges emerging, particularly in New South Wales. We are now seeing even more significant impacts across the container deposit scheme, construction, offices, tourism, retail and the SME segment more generally. To address the New South Wales headwinds, we have implemented cost mitigants including overtime reduction, staff redeployment, minimising discretionary spending, rerouting of fleet and parking up fleet. We'll actively monitor the evolving situation and implement further responses as necessary. In Q4 FY20, we were able to reduce excess leave balances as a cost mitigant, but this lever can only be pulled once. After implementation of these cost reduction measures, we expect the current restrictions will result in a negative impact to EBITDA of approximately $4 million per month. Moving now to segment performances. Solid Waste Services net revenue increased 7.5% or $103.5 million to around $1.5 billion. EBITDA increased 4.4% or $17.2 million to $405.5 million and EBIT increased marginally to $213 million. Solid Waste Services benefited from full year contributions from statewide recycling and the VCRR businesses and initial contributions from Stall Landfill, Grasshopper and the Pinkenbar recycling acquisitions. New municipal contracts together with the WA Regional CDS contract, national C&I customer account wins and increased volumes from the Metropolitan Waste and Resource Recovery Group in Melbourne further benefited the segment. These were offset by lower post-collections volumes at the Erskine Park Inert Landfill in Sydney. During the second half, a project to construct a mechanically stabilised earth wall to increase airspace was delayed, which impeded our ability to accept volumes. The project is expected to be completed in Q2 FY22 and will create an additional 400,000 cubic metres of airspace. Subject to completion of the transaction with Suez, the Kemps Creek landfill will provide us with a longer-term inert landfill solution for New South Wales. In addition, Western Australian volumes and prices at the Dardanup landfill were lower as municipal councils aggressively competed to fill their landfill airspace ahead of energy from waste facilities commencing operations in Perth in late 2022. Towards the end of the financial year, the Perth MRF rebuild was completed. At this early stage post-commissioning, I'm pleased to report that it is producing high-quality outputs well within customer specifications. Whilst EBITDA was up, our EBITDA margins declined 80 basis points across the year. This largely reflected a change in mix in our business with lower post-collections volumes at the Erskine Park and Dardanup landfills, which are typically higher margin businesses, offsetting strong growth in lower margin municipal contracts and national C&I customer wins. Further analysis is included in the appendix to this presentation. Moving now to our IWS segment. Industrial and Waste Services reported EBITDA of $48 million, 4.6% higher than the prior corresponding period. The EBITDA margin was 110 basis points higher than the prior corresponding period, reflecting the successful execution of the strategy of exiting low-value work streams and delivering the first full year of reporting on a fully integrated basis. EBIT increased $1.2 million to $22.6 million, and EBIT margin increased 60 basis points to 7.4%. The IWS segment performed strongly and consolidated the quality of earnings delivered in previous years. It was particularly strong in the mining sector in Western Australia, despite the challenges of COVID-19 and the labour shortages resulting from border closures. Building on its leading market position in the mining sector in WA, the segment also expanded its presence across the oil and gas and infrastructure markets. During the year, IWS renewed several key contracts, including South 32, Yarrabadella Shire Council and BHP Olympic Dam. It also commenced its contract with Fortescue Metals Group. Most of these contracts have a three-year tenor. We also secured contracts with the Southern Ports Authority and the Australian Submarine Corporation. IWS also undertook significant project activity with key customers through FY21, with a positive outlook for similar work this year. Moving to the Liquid Waste and Health Services segment. Liquid Waste and Health Services reported steady revenue. The segment increased EBITDA by 3.5% to $110 million, and EBITDA margins increased 80 basis points to 21.5%. EBIT increased 5.1% to $67.6 million, and EBIT margins increased 70 basis points to 13.2%. While revenue was flat, the growth in profitability is evidence of the successful integration of the Tox-Free Liquids business with Cleanaways. The Liquid Waste and Health segment comprises our hydrocarbons business, our health services business, and our liquids and technical services business. In the hydrocarbons business, the effects of COVID-19 lockdowns resulted in lower East Coast oil collection volumes. This was particularly the case in Victoria and Southeast Queensland. A temporary increase in product stewardship receipts in the first half for high-quality recycled base oil offset the lower first half of benchmark oil commodity prices. The health services business realised higher earnings from COVID-19 related activity at aged care facilities, hotel quarantine and mass testing and vaccination centres. Fewer elective surgeries resulted in less medical waste, while the international border closures resulted in substantially lower quarantine work from airlines and cruise ships. During the year, the health services business upgraded both its incinerator and hammer mill in Melbourne, commenced the redevelopment of its Queensland site, and commissioned a shredder to handle product destruction at its Sydney site. The liquids and technical service business delivered higher earnings than FY20. Pleasingly, this was achieved on a backdrop of lower volumes from tourist-heavy states and the hospitality sector more broadly. In addition, cruise ship volumes were non-existent. During the year, we further developed our Dandenong site to handle asbestos-contaminated soils and to deal with residual waste from the Tottenham chemical storage plant fire. The segment also benefited from the treatment of contaminated soils from the Parramatta Light Rail project and soil clean-up projects generally. Seasonally high rain events in New South Wales and Queensland resulted in an increase in leachate volumes across the network. We continue to see increased regulatory controls and monitoring across all elements of dangerous goods storage and transport, composting and PFAS management. In principle, Cleanaway supports such initiatives and is well positioned to deliver customer solutions. Moving to our margin targets on the next slide. We've been making good progress towards the medium-term margin targets we set last year despite COVID-19 headwinds. The Industrial and Waste Services and Liquid Waste and Health Services segments are benefiting from well-managed integration of the tox-free business and a clear focus on core business lines. In the Solid Waste Service segment, we grew both EBITDA and EBIT, but not the margins. Lower volumes at Erskine Park and Dardanup landfills and a changing mix of customers in the Solid Waste Services segment contributed to lower EBITDA margin in FY21. Whilst this changing mix did vary the margin, absolute profitability was enhanced with our success in winning new C&I and municipal contracts, albeit at lower margins than landfill tonnes. In FY22, Solid Waste Services margins will be adversely impacted by up to $10 to $15 million lower EBITDA from the new Chum landfill as previously disclosed. This is expected to be more than offset by the contribution of the Suez Sydney assets, with the acquisition now expected to be completed around the middle of FY22. I will discuss our digitisation and process automation initiatives later in the presentation. These initiatives will contribute to increased margins over time. We remain committed to achieving and maintaining our medium-term target margins, noting there may be road bumps along the way. I will now hand over to Paul to take you through some of the financials in more detail.
Thanks, Brendan. The statutory profit after tax attributable to ordinary equity holders of $145.3 million was 29% higher than last year. The underlying adjustments to EBIT totaled $16 million, but only a net $5.5 million at an NPAT level. $7 million related to the Perth MRF and Cleanaway having to incur higher costs from third parties to process recyclables as we honoured the contractual commitment to our customers. $7.9 million related to acquisitions and integration of the businesses that Brendan discussed earlier, and in particular the acquisition of the Suez Sydney assets. $4.3 million related to CEO transition costs, and there are further details of these in the remuneration report. We also took an impairment charge of $4.5 million for the cost associated with our unsuccessful tender for the Westgate Tunnel project, and $2.7 million write-off of assets damaged by fire at our Welshpool transfer station. Partially offsetting this was an adjustment related to employee entitlements and a change in the remediation provision discount rate, together a $10.4 million benefit. So turning now to CapEx. We apply a disciplined approach to capital expenditure whilst at the same time pursuing value accretive opportunities. Capital expenditure is higher than prior years and reflects the success we've had in securing new contracts, not only in the muni space, but also national C&I customers as well. Our continued success in winning government-related contracts has resulted in us utilising increasing amounts of leasing to finance a related asset purchase. This will continue should we win further contracts. We use leasing finance to align our cash outflows to service the customers with the contracted inflows. This year, we've split out our growth capex and stay-in business capex to provide you with a better understanding of the capital needs of the business. As you can see, stay-in business capex is broadly in line with the prior year. Total growth capex includes new municipal contracts, the Western Australia Container Deposit Scheme, resource recovery equipment, and assets to service the new C&I customers and other contractual wins across our IWS and liquids business. Approximately $100 million of CapEx is eligible under the temporary instant asset write-off program. Total CapEx for FY22 is planned to be below FY21, with stay-in-business CapEx remaining at a similar level. Consistent with the increase in capital expenditure and factors that Brendan described earlier, we expect the FY22 D&A to be approximately $290 million. Increases in tender success would increase CapEx and associated D&A, as will the Suez Sydney assets acquired around the middle of the year. Moving to focus on cash flow and balance sheet. Cleanaway continues to generate strong and consistent operating cash flow. In FY21, operating cash flow increased $23 million to $424 million due to higher profitability and lower remediation costs, partially offset by the reversal of favourable prior period working capital movements. The cash conversion ratio still remains in excess of 100% at 102.4%. Our ongoing strong credit management has resulted in overdue debts continuing to fall, and we've seen no material increase in credit defaults caused by COVID-19. Our continued strong earnings and cash flows have provided directors with the confidence to increase dividend payments while remaining comfortably within our target payout range of 50 to 75% of underlying NPAT. With a well-capitalised balance sheet, we have ample capacity to support further accretive growth. So now turning to our capital structure. From a debt capital perspective at year end, the group had $930 million of headroom under our existing banking facilities, and at 1.61 times levered, we remain well within the leverage covenant limit of less than 3 times, calculated on a pre-AASB 16 basis. We have significant headroom within our other banking covenants, and our next refinancing is not due until July 2023. During the year, we secured additional funding for the acquisition of the Suez Sydney assets. This comprised a $500 million, 3-year committed debt facility under the group's syndicate facility agreement. 7 existing syndicate banks and 1 new bank are participating in the new facility. I'll now hand you back to Brendan.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. The existence and size of landfill levies impacts our landfill diversion investment decisions. The chart on this slide sets the scene in terms of where we have come from and where we are going to from a regulatory perspective. You can clearly see the step change in landfill levies over time. On the right-hand side of the page, we have outlined the key dates with respect to the waste export bans. Where previously some rudimentary sorting and baling was sufficient to produce exportable commodities, the bar has been lifted significantly. It is the combination of rising levies together with export bans that are driving the decisions to invest in both resource recovery and domestic value-adding processes. Cleanaway continues to proactively position its business to meet the opportunities and challenges posed by the export bans, including investing in glass beneficiation, plastic sorting, flaking and reprocessing, and investigating innovative technologies to process mixed paper. The next slide of the value chain highlights the opportunities that are emerging, and I'll outline in subsequent slides how we are continuing to capture those opportunities. Our strategy continues to guide our acquisitions and organic development activity. While it will continue to evolve, it remains contemporary and fit for purpose. We continue to pursue and develop value accretive opportunities across the waste value chain. In terms of collections, we're seeing a greater focus on source separation, whether it be through additional bins for FOGO and glass, the introduction of container deposit schemes, or greater product stewardship across a wide range of products. We recently invested with the support of the Clean Energy Finance Corporation to develop and launch our greeniest online recycling education tool. It will be through education that we as a society will learn to be better recyclers and improve resource recovery rates. It is the choices we make as individuals that will ultimately determine how successful we are at growing the circular economy. Moving across the value chain, we see new markets and opportunities are emerging in resource recovery, resulting from overseas and domestic waste policies. The factors that are driving resource recovery are also incentivising closed-loop recycling, thereby creating domestic markets for activities that had previously been undertaken overseas. Cleanaway is an active participant in these growing markets. We will continue to seek opportunities to maximise resource recovery and therefore capture a greater portion of the growing diversion prize. The next big market to develop in the waste value chain will be energy from waste. Australia is a laggard in terms of the transition from putrescible landfills to energy from waste, but momentum is building. 2 projects in West Australia are under construction, and there are multiple project proposals across the eastern states. The speed and rate of change is being driven by several factors, including transparent and stable policy, diminishing landfill airspace, and increasing waste levies. The transition will generate multi-billion dollar investment opportunities. It will also lower emissions as landfills produce methane, which is around 28 times more potent a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. Finally, greater resource recovery and energy from waste will inevitably result in some pressure on landfill volumes over time. However, we see landfill coexisting with energy from waste for the foreseeable future as capital city landfill capacity is reduced and populations grow. It is important to also note that not all waste can be economically recycled or incinerated, and therefore landfills will continue to play an important role. The next slide looks at how we are positioning the business from a plastics perspective. A significant opportunity exists to generate value from recyclable polymers. Annually, there are almost 2 million tonnes of polymers consumed that are suitable for mechanical recycling. As domestic export bans are implemented, Australia will require 140,000 tonnes of domestic processing capacity to address the volumes that are currently being exported for reprocessing. We have already committed to a $45 million PET plastic palletising facility in Albury with our joint venture partners. Commissioning of the facility is expected in the next quarter. We have also entered another JV with PACT, and we have committed to developing a 20,000 tonne HDPE and PP palletising facility in Melbourne, for which the Victorian and federal governments have awarded $3 million in grant funding. The WA and federal governments have also awarded $9.5 million in grant funding for a plastic flaking facility in Perth, for which we are currently finalising a feasibility study. Regulatory changes and the opportunities they create highlight the importance of being integrated throughout the value chain. As regulations and societal demands change, so too will value shift from one part of the value chain to another. Moving now to energy from waste. Our energy from waste project in Western Sydney continues on track and is currently being assessed by the New South Wales Department of Planning, Industry and Environment. The department will issue an assessment report in due course, and subject to approval, it will then go to the Independent Planning Commission, who are the determining authority. We are hopeful of a decision by the department by Q2 FY22. We then expect the Independent Planning Commission process to complete in the following quarter, but I caution that we have no control over these timeframes. Energy from waste has been identified specifically in the New South Wales Government's waste strategy, and is part of the solution for disposal of residual waste. The New South Wales Energy from Waste policy includes new rules that ensure projects meet and exceed world's best practice air quality standards. This provides greater clarity for our project, which has emission controls designed to exceptionally high standards. In Victoria, the draft Energy from Waste framework was released in June for consultation and is expected to be finalised around mid-2022. We plan to participate in energy from waste in Victoria and are progressing with site identification and due diligence. In Queensland, a targeted consultation was completed following release of the government's energy from waste policy, with a guideline proposed to be released shortly. We plan to develop an energy from waste facility in southeast Queensland, with site identification and due diligence having commenced. Moving to the next slide and a recap of the agreement we reached with Suez during the year. In April this year, we announced the agreement to acquire 5 transfer stations and 2 landfills in Sydney from Suez for $501 million. As this slide shows, the acquisition will deliver a complete post-collection footprint solution for Cleanaway in Sydney. In calendar year 2020, the assets contributed $73 million EBITDA on a pro forma pre-ASB 16 basis. Based on current timelines, we expect the transaction to complete around the middle of FY22. We are redeploying our proven integration playbook that we used for the successful TOX-free integration, with the same executive general manager to lead the integration of the Suez assets. We commenced working on the integration several months ago, including some data analytics work that I will discuss shortly, and we remain on track to deliver against the expected completion date of around the middle of this financial year. The timing is, however, ultimately determined by the various regulatory bodies involved. Moving to the next slide and a quick update on digitisation and data and analytics. We have been steadily progressing our digitisation and data analytics initiatives. Digitisation is separate to data analytics, but the latter is more powerful within a fully digitised environment. Digitisation is a critical enabler to drive improvement in customer experience and employee satisfaction. It will enable us to realise significant efficiency gains and support organic growth and reduce customer churn. The data and analytics focus is on margin expansion by uncovering customer, product and operational insights and creating a pricing and operating culture that is data driven. We have commenced executing this through a series of targeted initiatives. One such initiative is the bin profitability program. We're drawing data from our routes, including bin sizes, weights, and even labour costs where a route requires overtime to ensure distance travelled is economic. Adjustments can then be made to improve profitability. An initial pilot in Melbourne gave us confidence that this program will drive improved margins, and we're looking to expand it into the rest of Victoria during the first half of this year. We look forward to updating you in February next year on the results of the initial rollout in Melbourne. The team is currently also focused on a route optimisation initiative to support the integration of the Suez transfer stations and landfill assets within the collections business in New South Wales. Moving now to the priorities and outlook for FY22. Priorities for the coming year include establishing ESG targets and improving performance across all measures, integrating the New South Wales landfills and transfer stations, commissioning the PET plastic pelletising facility and further developing circular economy opportunities, progressing our post-collection strategy, including advancement of our energy from waste projects, focusing on improving our quality of earnings through operational improvements, including data analytics initiatives, remaining responsive to the evolving COVID-19 impacts, and increasing the available airspace at our new Chum and Erskine Park landfills. Heading into FY22, there was a strong underlying momentum in the business, and we expected to grow our earnings had COVID-19 related impacts been broadly in line with FY21. The duration and nature of the current New South Wales lockdowns and potential medium-term implications on economic activity is more severe than in FY21. The diversification of our revenue streams and our ability to flex costs continue to provide a partial offset to these headwinds. However, under the current policy settings, restrictions in New South Wales are estimated as having approximately $4 million negative EBITDA impact per month, primarily as a result of the closure of the bulk of the New South Wales Container Deposits Scheme, restrictions on construction activity and weakness in the C&I market. We will provide a trading update at our annual general meeting on the 22nd of October. We have a lot of people on the line this morning, so can I ask you to limit your questions to one or two, and we can come back to you for follow-ups if there is time or after the call. Operator, could you please open the lines for questions?
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question via the phones, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Russell Gill from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, it's going to be hard to limit myself to two. But firstly, just on your guidance, you've opened the door here by, I guess, quantifying some impacts there. You've also quantified UChum negative impact. You've got the Perth MRF coming on this year. Can you possibly quantify what the contribution from that would have been? And just to clarify, when you're talking about growth in the business, that would have been ex sewers and ex the COVID impact that you would expect? And what sort of level of growth, is it similar sort of dynamic you would have expected in FY21?
Yeah, so Russell, good question, not surprising. Firstly, I'd say that we had very good momentum the last few months of FY21, really pleasing. The team were excited heading into FY22, into July, and then things changed pretty quickly in New South Wales. At the time, we were expecting our FY22 performance, we would grow on FY21, assuming that we'd still have levels of COVID similar impacts to FY21. That's changed substantially, particularly on the Container Deposit Scheme business in Sydney, where we have, between New South Wales and Wollongong, probably over 100 people engaged in collecting containers every day. As I said, there's 2.5 billion containers per day reduction in what's being collected. It's a core part of our business. You also mentioned the Perth MRF, so it's coming on. Look, it's still ramp up, and we're really pleased with the quality of what we're producing. We've still got to get the efficiency up. So it's not going to move the dial a lot, but it certainly helps, as will getting the landfill in Sydney at Erskine Park up and running. That's our Erskine Park one, not the Suez one. So there's a few things coming on board that we're really happy about, and I think we'll be better placed, Russell, to come back in October at the AGM and give some better insights about what we're thinking for the year.
I mean, just also on that, with the COVID lockdown in Sydney and you guys are burning $4 million a month relative to last year in cash, you highlighted C&I weakness in that space. Do you see an opportunity in this next 6 months on lockdown in New South Wales to gain share in that marketplace?
Yeah, it's a good question, Russell. And we've certainly gone back and looked at a lot of our data. As I said, we're a data-driven organisation and looked at what occurred in Victoria, particularly over time. We certainly hadn't let go of our sales force and we've still got our sales force intact there. So there's certainly going to be opportunities. I mean, whenever you're a nimble and capable organisation, there will always be opportunities. We plan to be like that. And if our competitors are not so diligent, then that presents opportunities for us.
Okay, then the second question. I'm just going to call you out here.
Like a second question, Russell.
That was a part B. The second question, I'm going to call you out here on your medium-term targets, which are basically the same, which were upgraded 12 months ago, but they are the same. Just your solid waste services businesses at the 29 to 29.5, you're now bringing on the sewers asset, the smaller deal, which are 40% EBITDA margins, which added, you know, almost 150 basis points on a pro forma basis on that division, yet your medium-term target remains the same. Can you just talk through that dynamic?
Yeah, look, that diagram is meant to be directional, and as we've said before, we've actually increased the targets once before. This is a bit like being a high jumper. You know, once you get over one bar, you raise it and you go for the next one. So let us get there first, Russell. We're not going to take just a free kick from the Suez assets. And as you know, there's challenges at EBITDA New Chum and Erskine Park landfills there. So we'll work through that. We'll get to those targets and then we'll lift the bar again.
Okay. Thanks. I'll leave it for someone else now.
Thanks, Russell.
Thank you. The next question is from Peter Steen from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, Brendan. Paul, thanks very much for your time. And Richie, I'm going to ask a strategic question first, just to change the tack a little bit. But energy from waste, you've outlined your intentions in Victoria and Queensland around FATA identification. Clearly, the market's not going to absorb too much capacity in each of those markets. So just curious whether you believe there's still an ability to have a first mover advantage in both those markets and get your position before competitors do?
Yeah, look, very, very good question, Peter. Look, we are, I think we have to remember, we are large owners of waste in those markets, in both Queensland and Melbourne, or Southeast Queensland and Melbourne. And I think that's one thing people lose sight of sometimes. You need to have the raw material, it's like any other manufacturing process, the raw material or feedstock. In this case, it happens to be waste. So we're well positioned there. So others need to acquire that. We'll obviously want to acquire more, but we have a very good set of collections facilities to start with. So I think we're well placed. We know how to do energy from waste. We've got an experienced team in Sydney now. Remember our joint venture partner, Macquarie, who came from Greenbank out of the UK, very experienced in delivering energy from waste facilities. So we're certainly well placed for the future.
Thanks, Brendan. I'm just going to labour the point around your $4 million. I just wanted to quickly clarify, has that got better? Because obviously we had the construction shutdown in New South Wales, which is probably trying to make its way back, to be fair. But has the impact got better or has $4 million been a fairly consistent number since the beginning of the lockdowns? And then, you know, is there any evolution likely? You know, do you see a pathway to having CDS coming back sooner than perhaps the lockdown ending?
Good question. So unfortunately, I guess I'm not a member of the New South Wales government and probably can't quite influence some of those outcomes. And also it depends on
how the numbers go on COVID infections each day. So I can't really quantify. What I can say, Pete, is that we'll pull the levers. This will be short term. New South Wales will get through it. There may be, whether construction comes back a couple of weeks earlier or container deposit scheme comes back a couple of weeks later, time will tell. But it's as an estimate, we wanted to call that out, be absolutely transparent that we've got big exposures here. We can't quite mitigate them all. It's about $4 million. And I think if you think that this will finish once we get vaccination rates in New South Wales up to, say, 70%, then when will that be? So I think hopefully it's short term, Peter, and we'll see what happens. But a couple more months, I'm hoping, at worst.
Okay. So it's been pretty consistent around the $4 million mark since the effects.
Yeah, look, we might see a bit coming back from construction and what happens with the, particularly the LGAs that have been specifically locked down much tighter than other areas, and what happens in those particular areas and whether they come back and the freedom of work and movements out of those areas. So there's quite a number of pieces to the puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. No, certainly complex. Thanks, Brendan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you. The next question is from Jacob Karkanis from Jarden, Australia. Please go ahead.
G'day, Brendan. G'day, Paul. Just a question to start. Just on the second half, your revenue for the solid waste business grew 13%, but your EBITDA grew 6%. You've got a 27.1% EBITDA margin there. Can you just confirm whether or not there are any COVID impacts in that second half? Specifically the fourth quarter, and then just on your $4 million a month in the same question, are you guys expecting a catch-up or is that demand destructed moving forward, particularly for the CDS?
Yeah, hi, Jacob. If I can pick that one up. I think what we saw in terms of trading in the second half in particular, we actually saw a really strong momentum in the May-June period, that across all of the business, but particularly the solids business. And I think what that really sort of demonstrated to us is that when you had, I guess, a return to a more normal type of COVID type of situation in terms of fewer restrictions, you can just see the business really coming back quite strongly. So certainly May and June we saw very good trading. That was also, of course, supplemented too by some excellent wins in terms of the C&I business, national accounts. Again, I think we've called out in the pack wins of people like Aldi and Spotlight, and they were certainly kicking in that final quarter of the year. Whilst it's excellent business to win, it is typically lower margin, and at the same time, we saw lower contributions, as Brendan called out, in those two key landfills in Dardanup and Erskine Park, which obviously typically are higher margin businesses as well. So, and I guess the commentary is spot on in the sense of saying that we had great momentum coming out of FY21 and into 22, which has sort of been impacted a bit, almost exclusively in New South Wales. So we're still seeing good trading in spite of restrictions in Vic. We're still seeing good activity down here. So, as I say, this is pretty much a localised issue with quite specific concerns around CDS and construction in New South Wales.
Yeah, and I'll just add on, I think, Jake, you asked what happens to the containers that aren't being picked up. Was that sort of the theme of your other part of your question?
That was part B of one, yep.
Yeah, so the part B there, it's a very good question and one that we've asked our joint venture partner, Tomra, to draw on their experience in other parts of the world where we have the return and earn kiosk, where they have the return and earn kiosks and what's happening. And experience elsewhere in the world suggests that in some of the higher socioeconomic areas, the cans are just, and bottles are going through the normal recycling bins. And not going through the return and earn scheme. In some of the lower socioeconomic areas, people will save them up and hang on to them, and then they will actually come back into the system at some later stage. But we've got to wait and see how that pans out in the Sydney market.
That's good colour. Thanks for that, Brendan. And then just my second question, just on the sewers acquisition, you've said that there's $77 million of pro forma EBITDA. It mentions in the footnote that that's based on volumes under Cleanaway's ownership. Can you confirm whether or not that $77 million of EBITDA includes any third-party volumes? And then part B of that, is there any seasonality in that business at all?
Part A, what we did to determine the pro forma EBITDA was take the current performance, the performance of that business for the calendar year 2020, take out the volumes from sewers themselves, they will now go to Veolia's landfills, we expect, and then take out, then add in Cleanaway volumes that were not going to Suez at that point in time, because we'll want to internalise those volumes. Any third party volumes that were already in there are still in those numbers. They were the two big adjustments we made. Suez volumes out, Cleanaway volumes in. And you asked on seasonality. Generally not, no. It's, waste comes in every day of the year and pretty consistent year round.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the extra colour.
Thanks, Jake.
Thank you. The next question is from Cameron McDonald from E&P. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, guys. Just on the $4 million a month impact from New South Wales, obviously Victoria is also in lockdown and, you know, it's a stricter lockdown than what we've seen in New South Wales typically. You not calling out anything from Victoria, and is that because the base effect that, you know, it's not worse than it was this time last year, or can we get some colour around the Victorian experience?
Yeah, good question, Cameron. A couple of things there to draw attention to. In the Victorian lockdowns, they've never really taken out construction. There's been a few changes to behaviour on construction sites from time to time, but construction is still by and large continued, whereas construction was particularly, I think it's in the back end of July, early August, was severely impacted by much more stringent closures in New South Wales. Also finding the difference in New South Wales is this ability to move freely in what happens between one local government area and another. That's putting challenges on workforces. Businesses are shutting down more frequently, cases of COVID and getting workers. And the other one big difference is container deposit scheme. As I said, we've got over 100 people employed directly and indirectly to pick up containers every day. As I said, there's 2.5 million containers approximately between Wollongong and Newcastle that are not being picked up at the moment. That's a lot of containers when you consider that they're not crushed, so we need a lot of trucks to run around picking those up. There's a lot there. There's variable costs that we can cut down. We're redeploying drivers, but there's profit that you obviously don't replace, and there's fixed costs as well. And that's the big difference with Melbourne. And also to say, Melbourne seemed to, while the smaller SME markets are probably more affected, as we see here in Melbourne, the restaurants and the like, and the smaller end of town, the retail, but the bigger end of town, the construction keeps going, the major enterprises keep running by and large, and as you said, it's no different to what we were doing last year.
Okay, that's great, thank you. And just to confirm, just on the guidance around growth, you know, are you assuming that you do get the approval for the new Chum extension in that sort of underlying guidance, or, you know, and also what's the assumption around the volume outlook for Dardanup, given that you've sort of lost volumes there and you've got energy from waste starting up, but and the councils have signed up to send volumes to those energy from waste facilities.
Yeah, so a couple of things there. So New Chum, we won't, at best we might get a decision later this financial year on New Chum, but by the time it comes then we have to get ready to put our height rise process in place. So we're not assuming any extra volumes back, we're assuming
to take that $10 to $15 million EBITDA hit this year. And even with that, we're expecting to grow our business year on year outside of the changes to COVID we're seeing coming through. That was where we were positioned prior to what we saw in recent COVID change time. That's one part of your question. The other part, so Darden Up landfill in WA, the waste to energy plants there, I don't believe come online this financial year. I think they come online at the back end of calendar 22. So we may see some changes there. We will see some changes and fights for volume, and we'll have to manage our processes accordingly. What we are seeing at the moment, though, is that some of the councils who are wanting to go there are trying to fill up their own landfills quickly now. So I think that pressure will be away from us. I think we'll see some of those disappear. Councils will no longer run landfills. So some of that remaining capacity, I think, will be cut, closed down and be replaced by waste to energy. But certainly there'll be impacts, but we expect to still have a profitable landfill down there in Western Australia.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Cameron.
Thank you. The next question is from Raju Ahmed from CCZ Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Brendan and Paul. Two questions from me. The first one, just going back to that $4 million hit per month, can I just clarify that is a net number? And by net, I'm saying that you've got a hit less the adjustments to your cost that you've had.
That's correct. That's correct. So, Raju, we've done a good job up there. So the New South Wales team have worked really hard in terms of identifying mitigants and cost out, and the figure that you're seeing, the other $4 million, is a net figure.
So yeah, thank you for that. What I was getting to was in the, I think the first COVID impact, I think what is it, March, April, May of 2020, you guys saw a shift in volumes to a certain extent from CNI to municipal. Are you expecting that this time? And if so, is that baked into that $4 million?
Not seeing it as much this time, Raju. I think last time, a bit over a year ago, we all saw the scenes on our television there of the panic buying. So what that resulted in was households having a lot of food at home and doing a lot of cooking at home. So we saw that ultimately, and then online shopping as well, filling up household rubbish bins. We saw that. We also saw huge demand from the supermarkets for increased emptying of the containers due to the volumes going through. So I'm not seeing that from the supermarkets this time round. The panic buying is not quite there. But also, there will be some extra volumes come out of curbside. But remember, it's Sydney curbside waste. So where we do have a collections contract, regardless of how much is in the bin, we just get paid to collect the bin. And where the volume, the weight has an impact is at the landfill, and we don't have a landfill that collects it in Sydney. So we won't get that benefit. The other thing we're seeing this time round, I remember last time in lockdown in Melbourne, myself, Paul and everyone, on a weekend you would do the clean outs at home and put the hard waste out on the curb to be collected. A lot of clean-up work. Clean Away did very well out of that, as would all waste companies that had those contracts. What we're seeing now, though, is that is being suspended in many of the local government areas in New South Wales. Presumably for reasons that that could be a possible area to transmit the virus. So we're not seeing that benefit this year as well. So there are quite a few changes that are happening, and that contribute to the $4 million.
Okay, thank you for that. The second question was around the Suez Sydney assets. There's really two parts to it. The first one was the post-ASB 16, $76 million in EBITDA that you've indicated. How would that be impacted if you were owning those assets right now?
How would that be impacted? That would be
so
pretty much...
Would that be lower?
No, that would be the idea being that would be the number if we owned those assets. Now, there'd be some variances, but I think it's one of the earlier questions. That number was determined based on what Suez did in FY20. We removed the Suez volumes and assumed they will then go to a Veolia landfill, and then added in Cleanaway's volumes as if, because that's what we would do, we would internalise those volumes. So the difference then, Raju, is the work that I said we're doing on our routing in Sydney today to be ready to take ownership of those landfills so that we have our routing all ready to be more efficient on where our trucks are going to and from to deliver into our own landfills then at our own transfer station network and landfills in Sydney.
Raju, I guess it goes back to one of our earlier comments about why Victoria was so, I guess, resilient during the significant lockdown last year. We had a large trestable landfill and we saw volumes over those weighbridges being relatively stable. And our expectation is that that's exactly what will be occurring now during the lockdown that Sydney is suffering right now. So again, don't expect there to be any material impact in terms of the material COVID impact on those earnings when we take those assets over.
Okay, and the follow-on question in the head, this is the last one, is in terms of the integration, I know you're talking about taking in Cleanaway volumes and so on and so forth. Are you seeing any additional synergy upsides? Is that baked into that 76, 77 million number, or do you have a view that there's going to be a substantial synergy on top of that?
No, Raju, we're not seeing a lot of synergies in this because fundamentally we don't have transfer stations or landfills in Sydney. We now get hold of them. If we had our own already and we were buying some more, then we would get synergies from the amalgamation of the two. But unfortunately, there's very little. We will get some route improvements and efficiency in truck movement, which, as I said, the data analytics team are working on that now with the routing experts. So we will get some benefits out of that. But effectively, there are none of the traditional synergies that you would expect to see. They don't have their own systems, we'll put them on our systems. If you're buying a whole company, that's a little bit different. We're just buying a suite of assets that we don't have that will plug in nicely into our business.
Okay, that's helpful. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Raju.
Thank you. The next question is from Cindy Shao from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Brett and Paul and Richie. Just for CapEx, CapEx will be lower than FY21. I was just wondering if it will come back to the 10% net revenue level, or we are kind of moving away from it for the CapEx tax benefit in the next 2 years.
I guess the key focus here is simply opportunity. So what we're seeing in terms of the higher CapEx figure for FY21 was a very successful run in terms of new muni contracts and a successful run in terms of new customer accounts. Now, certainly in terms of the national CNI customers, you don't have to buy necessarily huge amounts of assets to support those because you simply bolt those into existing routes and existing infrastructure. So to that extent, that does help. But muni contracts, you have to essentially go out and buy a new truck lease. Added to which, we're seeing good opportunities, as Brendan outlined, in terms of the circular economy. And again, that's requiring us to invest in infrastructure, which obviously is hitting our CapEx line. In terms of looking forward, we're also benefiting, obviously, from the instant asset write-off program that the government has rolled out. And that's clearly beneficial in terms of going to be reducing our tax payments to pretty much zero for the next 2 or 3 years. And we are seeing good opportunities going forward as well. So my expectation is that whilst CapEx might be a little bit lower next year than the current year, it will probably still remain higher in total. So cash plus finance leasing will remain higher than that 10% figure, simply because we're seeing great opportunities out there to invest.
Does that help?
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thanks. Next question about DNA. So with no assumption of the new term extension approval going forward, are we looking for higher landfill depreciation rate going higher?
Yeah, look, there will be an element of increased landfill amortization, principally coming from Erskine Park. So you've seen we're investing in the MSE wall. That will come online probably October, November of this year. It'll ramp up over the year. And as more tonnes go into that site, so we'll see increased amortization coming from that particular landfill. So a combination of that, a full year contribution from the acquisitions and the new muni contracts that we won and have gone operational in this current year, we'll see D&A. We think around that 290 mark. That's obviously prior to any new work that we're yet to win and the benefit to or the impact to from the sewers assets as well.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Mindy.
Thank you. The next question is from Amit Kanwatia from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Good morning, all. Just a question on the outlook. Appreciate, you've delivered $535 million EBITDA. That's a 4% growth, and appreciate you calling out $4 million impact, largely in the New South Wales. But if I think about the business excluding New South Wales, can you talk to some of the positives you see? Basically, just wanted to understand what's the underlying growth momentum in other parts of the business, other regions, excluding New South Wales. Thank you.
Yeah, look, thanks, Amit. Good question. Look, excluding New South Wales, and as I think I said earlier, coming into particularly May and June, we as a team were very impressed. Everything was coming together nicely. This is where we expected the business to be. Good momentum leading into July. So that was across the country and across every part of our business. So really excited into July. So we did expect, I'm not going to talk about measuring the growth exactly, but good solid growth. And where we're seeing that from is, we've been very successful in our municipal business. We do have a quality product in our cleaner view product that has helped us win contracts there. We've got a very good track record in serving good quality fleet, drivers, processes, systems. So we've done well in getting our share and growing our share in the market. Paul mentioned earlier a few extra C&I contracts, national ones, but as we said a year ago, we didn't actually reduce our sales workforce at all in the early rounds of COVID. We know some others did. We've had opportunities there to continue to grow our C&I work elsewhere in the country. We're seeing the places like the Pilbara and and IWS projects really going well. And that also has benefits for the liquid waste and health. So Karratha, Headland, Newman, and obviously WA hasn't had the same impacts from COVID as other places. So seeing some very, very good growth in that resources space particularly. So no, it's an exciting year ahead of us. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Our health business also has gone well. We've got new work there with all these injection and testing centres being set up. Hopefully you're also going along, getting the jab and seeing the yellow Cleanaway Daniels Sharp Smart containers there. Now, it's not going to move the needle entirely, but gee, it all helps. So there are so many good things happening out there in the business. This business is exciting. Then we've got the investments we're making in plastics. We've got the Albury joint venture coming on board. And what's important about that is, with the changing industry dynamics, you couldn't afford to be a business with just a MRF and trying to find end markets for your products. There were no end markets in Australia for recycled plastic commodities, very, very little. And so we've worked with the right partners, with PACT, with Asahi, with Coke, and we'll do even more in that space. So to create the necessary market. So no, there's a lot happening. There's a lot of good things that will drive the business over the next year. And then there's obviously the longer term benefits around data and digitisation work and our waste to energy longer term.
Thanks. I appreciate your comments there. Just a final question. Just thinking about the inflation, I think the annual CPI, I think that increased to 3.8% for 12 months to June 21. Appreciate this is a headline figure, but can you talk to some of the impacts you're seeing in your business and in the level of protection you have in your contracts?
Yeah, good
I think
question,
you called out labour shortages.
Yeah. So inflation, so certainly our municipal contracts and most of our larger C&I contracts have mechanisms in there to pass through cost increases. So the standard rise and fall clauses, which invariably at the moment will be rise clauses. We also maintain the ability to reprice at the lower end of the market as we need to, and that's because of the change in levies. And I presented a slide showing the changes of levies. And because that happens so frequently and sometimes not always on 1st of July, which is the norm, but sometimes 1st of January. So they give us opportunities to revisit our pricing and make sure we've covered off any of the rise and fall elements necessary. I think I'd point out too that because we are in an industry where the bulk of our industry can't be replaced by imports. I know that sounds strange, but so therefore, let's say fuel price goes up. If no one's got a special fuel advantage because they're not running solar trucks or whatever else, all running diesel trucks, well, that impacts all our competitors as well. So the playing field stays level anyway. We do get a slight competitive advantage though because we have an oil business. So if oil price goes up, we'll do a little bit better in our hydrocarbons business and we'll have some extra costs in our collections, which hopefully will pass through at some stage. So I think that the main message, Amit, is that we've got mechanisms in place to pass through the bulk of the cost increases, but from time to time there could be a lag if costs move very quickly in a short period.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Brendan.
Thanks, Amit.
Thank you. The next question is from Nathan Lead from Morgan. Please go ahead.
G'day, gents. Thanks for your presentation. First one for me, you've put a forecast out there that you expect to grow EBITDA over the next 5 years by about 7% CAGR. Given what you've sort of talked about in terms of the short-term headwinds and also the landfill levies and the waste bans, what do you need to occur for that sort of 7% CAGR to be achieved?
Yeah, good question, Nathan. I think you can imagine most of that work was done prior to the recent developments in New South Wales. And I think let's just touch on this 4 million. While we've called it out, I don't think it goes to the heart of value of Cleanaway. It should be a very temporary thing, an ideal world, hopefully only a number of months, and people have their own view about how long that'll be around there for. So that'll be temporary, so we'll get back there. We've got a good track record in growing the business. Remember, that's EBITDA growth, that's 7%. With leverage off the, we use leverage, so we don't need 7% revenue growth to get the 7% EBITDA growth. We just need to have more efficiency in our networks, using our data and analytics, getting our digitisation right, getting better utilisation of equipment. We still have more latent capacity in our systems. Whether it be depots, they've got more rooms to hold an extra truck if they need to. You know, trucks have always got some latent capacity. So, no, we're very confident the market will grow. And also, while we've always talked about this business being a GDP growth stock, what we're finding is the base business grows by GDP, but regulatory change is also having an impact on growth. PFAS, contaminated soils, for example. Contaminated liquids. So they're not something that existed years ago as a revenue stream. We're talking about fourth bins, certainly in Melbourne, fourth bins. We're talking about food and organics waste growing, the value adds on plastics. So there is so much growth out there in this industry over and above just GDP. So that gives us the confidence, and we've got the models going forward to suggest why those numbers are reasonable, Nathan.
Okay, so it doesn't assume waste to energy is built in there. It doesn't assume the Suez acquisitions. It doesn't assume new chum coming back online, et cetera.
Yeah, so certainly not waste to energy. New chum, I couldn't tell you exactly where the new chum, but it's not going to move the dial over the whole life of clean waste impairment testing, whether new chum's there or not.
Yep, okay. Second thing is, or question, just how hard are you willing to push the gearing when you acquire the Suez assets? I know you've got the $500 million debt facility, but is that really where you want to sort of set the capital structure post that acquisition?
Yeah, look, it's a good question. And we said at the time, Nathan, we will get the debt facility in place. We'll leave our options open. And I think at the time, our friends in France, Veolia, had announced that they expected the deal to conclude late this coming financial year, so the fourth quarter, so somewhere between April and June next year. So let's get the debt in place. Let's make sure we've got it, because you don't want to do an equity raise 12 months out. And let's put ourselves in a position where we can choose what we want to do and what we think our shareholders would want us to do at the right time. But we've got that debt there ready. As far as gearing goes, though, I think today where we're at, we could comfortably sit on, we could comfortably buy it all for debt, gear up a little bit, and then we've got pretty significant cash flows coming as a result of that to then pay it down. And I think that takes us, Paul, to only 2.25 times.
Yep. Okay.
So it's not really highly leveraged.
So the intention isn't to actually do an equity raise?
We'll make a decision at the right time there, Nathan, but we've certainly got the access to the debt funds, and they would take us to 2.25 if that's how we finance it.
Yep. Okay.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you. The next question comes from Scott Ryle from Remore Equity Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. Brendan, I wanted to ask you firstly about the addition of Coke to the PET recycling relationships that you've got. They, as recently as 12 months ago, had a relationship with Veolia on this front and were probably one of the most vociferous critics of the New South Wales Container Deposit Scheme. What's changed in terms of you bringing them within the tent, please?
So firstly, I won't comment on what was contained in, I think, their memorandum of understanding with Veolia. But certainly, I think the view is we need industry solutions to the plastic problem in Australia. And this is, this is not about just everyone trying to make an extra buck out of it. This is, having dealt with the CEOs of Asahi, Coke, Pact, everyone is very genuine. We actually need to have a solution. The regulatory environment is now suitable and favourable, and we need to have off-takers for materials, and we need to have suppliers. So it just made common sense to get all parties in the tent. Rest assured, I know that Asahi Beverages and Coke Beverages will absolutely be strong competitors, but at the end of the day, the environment and doing the right thing is probably not an area where we need to try and compete. But they were, certainly they had something to say about the container deposit scheme, but I think, like a lot of things in life, people will push the agenda that best suits their business. And that's fine. Coke will continue to do that. They'll continue to make choices that best suit their business, which may not be the same as what best suits Cleanaway's business. And that's fine, and we may compete differently for, say, the Victorian Container Deposit Scheme, and that's all fine. At the end of the day, providing a solution for society and taking, over a billion bottles that'll go through and get recycled, I mean, that's fabulous and it's something we should all be proud of.
Okay, and then my other question is on the energy to waste project that you've got in New South Wales. How appropriate is your partner now that they've bought quite a substantial business that just across the other side of the freeway that owns or has designs on a energy to waste plant as well?
Yeah, look, I mean, as you know, Macquarie are a huge organisation. many different strings to that bow there, but certainly we've worked well with the team. And remember, our partner came out of an organisation called Green Bank out of the UK, a very capable organisation when it came to energy from waste. We certainly didn't have the skills in-house for energy from waste, picked our great partner. I think Macquarie also picked a great partner as well and took over Green Bank there. So that's just the way things work out. But we also know they've got a very reputable organisation, very solid walls in-house to prevent material going the wrong way. So Macquarie are someone we've dealt with for a long time on a number of fronts, and we've certainly got them as our partner going forward in Sydney.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's all I had.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. The next question is from Paul Butler from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, just one question. You mentioned in the presentation an investment in a glass beneficiation capability. I'm just wondering if you can give us some more colour on that. Have you got customers to take material? And what's the revenue profile look like in terms of how much of the revenue is from gate fee versus from sale of the material?
Yeah, thanks, Paul, for the question. So first, I'd like to say we've got board approval to progress a glass beneficiation plant here in Melbourne. How we might progress that commercially, still doing some more work on that. So probably a little bit early to give you too much on that one. Suffice to say that it'll only proceed if it actually stacks up and we, compared to the next best alternative. So a little bit of work to go on that one. I think you're also asking about the sort of how much of our revenue in the materials comes through from gate rates versus commodity, was it? Is that the nature of the question? Yeah, so look, I can't give you the details on all those. I mean, you can all look up commodity prices. I guess I would say, though, that our investment in the old SKM assets, the VCRR, as you call it, Victoria Co-Mingled Recycling Facilities, extremely happy with that. We've spent a lot of time and money on it to get the efficiencies, to get the yields right. We are producing bales of whether it be PET bottles, the sort that will go through our plastic facility, over 99% purity, aluminium cans, 99% purity, working very, very well. So it took us a little while to get there, but it's a real winner. And also we've been able to improve the gate rates and increase the contamination charges. I mentioned our greeniest product we launched, which is something free for the community to understand more about how we recycle better. That's helping, and everything we can do to help people in society recycle better will improve the quality of our feedstock, which then improves our recoveries and yield. So, and what we have also done is so carrot and stick approach, also increased penalties for councils for delivering effectively rubbish to us. So I won't give you an exact split, but we'll certainly the lion's share comes from the gate rates, though, Paul.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. The next question comes from Shaura Bison from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
I think we might just have to make this the last one, operator. I think we've just about run out of time. So, okay. Shaura?
Hi, Brendan, Paul, Richie. Thank you for... Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for taking my question. I'm trying to get two quick ones in. So first is on the cost. Now, on your digitization efforts, thank you for the color. How should we think about that in terms of margin contribution? So when do you think they'll fully start contributing to your margin or on the cost line?
Yeah, look, early stages, we're probably more advanced on the data project. Digitisation, though, has got board approval and is commencing. It'll certainly, where we see the improvement to margins will come in through effectively making Cleanaway an easier organisation to deal with. Very hard to quantify that one exactly, but we expect that'll be improved, lower churn rates, giving customers less reason to want to leave. There's a whole lot to that project, that whether it be right through from the starting point of a through the sale, through the truck drivers, through operations, through time, getting everything as right as possible and making us really easy to deal with. We've had some, it's always challenging to try and put a value on that. And there'll be also efficiencies in not having to handle rework through gaining credit notes, all those sorts of things. So there's a lot in that. It will improve margins, but I can't give you an exact percentage here today.
And that's a little ways away, like two years away. Okay, great. No, thanks for the color. And sorry, just to go back on the EBITDA guidance again. I know everyone has done it. So the way I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, that looks to me that some sort of like a worst case scenario, right, that you're guiding to, because you also sort of mentioned construction in there too, right? Construction, which is no longer restricted. So correct me if I'm wrong, but that looks like a worst-case scenario number to me.
Look, we would hope things get better, and obviously construction ceased, then construction started, but not at full strength. So this is a very dynamic situation we're dealing with at the moment. So we wanted to call out certainly what we see our month of August looking like. Obviously, they're unaudited numbers, and just to call that out, and if it stays like that, and to give some colour to the market that things may change next month, they may get better, they may get worse, but you have at least somewhere to help guide this, your thinking.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the colour.
So let's finish up. The $4 million is temporary. So, operator, I think we'll call it a day there. It's been well and truly over time. I'd like to thank everyone for attending the call and for the very good questions.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.